Let me ask you, a lot of people are putting out suggestions. What say you? What would what can we do to prevent this in the future, John?
Well, I think the main thing to look at is where these types of attacks have been occurring. What have been the common features? Too much of the discussion just looks at rules like changes in background checks, background checks on private transfers or other things that, you couldn't name one mass public shooting in the last this century that would have been stopped by those rules. Instead, I think we need to look at the fact that all the mass public shootings in Florida, and about 98% of the mass public shootings in the country since 1950, they keep occurring in places where general citizens are banned from having guns. That these killers may be crazy in some sense, but they're not stupid. They want to go and kill as many people as possible, and they know if they can go to a place where victims aren't able to defend themselves, they'll be able to kill more people. Police are extremely important in most things. Police, anybody who's read my work knows that I think police are the single most important factor for reducing crime. But the problem is that putting an armed guard in uniform to protect a possible terrorist-type target is an almost impossible job. Having somebody in uniform there is like putting somebody with a neon sign above them that says, "Shoot me first." Time after time, when those types of attacks occur, the police officer who's there is the first person shot at and killed. And, having people who the killer doesn't know who he has to worry about, who might be able to stop him, takes away the huge strategic advantages that these killers have.
So would that mean that we have to arm, let's say, teachers? Or are you talking about maybe having basically armed guards that are not necessarily in uniform and that are kind of undercover armed guards? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think staff or teachers, look, the issue with having an undercover, so to speak, guard is that if he's not part of the regular school, he'll stand out. And my guess is pretty quickly the students are going to infer why he's there. And I have to tell you also, having that type of job as an armed guard is incredibly boring. I mean, you look at something like the Air Marshals program. They have a turnover rate of like 50% within the first 6 months that people are on the job there. Flying back and forth across the Atlantic may sound neat, but at some point, spending 6 hours or 6.5+ hours on a flight where you have to sit, be awake, not read anything, pay attention to everything that's going on around you, that's pretty painful at some point. And having somebody guard, elementary schools or secondary schools or even high schools, is going to be I mean, there are 100,000 public schools in the country, and the rate of attacks on any one school is very low. And so the advantages of having a teacher or in a number of states, you have 25 states that allow to differing degrees, teachers or staff to be able to have guns there. So we have a lot of experience, and I'm happy to talk about what's been the experience in those states.
So in those states, is there a specific rate of shootings versus the states where that don't have that? I mean, has that been
Well, I'll
shown?
tell you this much. There's not one mass public shooting that's occurred at a school that's allowed teachers and staff to have guns.
Well,
There's
there
not
you
been one so far.
go. Well, there
And
you go.
so, and I think that tells you something.
It tells me a lot. So I think the solution is, if I'm not mistaken, is to have the teachers armed or administrators armed.
Right. I just think staff or teachers doesn't have to be very many, just a few there, but people who aren't known to the attackers, or the attackers can't discern. You know, we have about 17 million concealed carry permit holders in the United States. Nationwide, that's about 6.5% of the adult population. If you kind of take out California and New York and D.C., you're talking about something that's almost 8.5% of the adult population. So for most people in the country, when you go to a movie theater or a mall or a restaurant or a grocery store, it's very likely that somebody near you has a concealed handgun permit. You know, and yet people never know. It's never a big issue. You know, the thing is, it's amazing when you read the diaries and statements from these killers, how they pay attention to these things. These guys plan these attacks at least 6 months, often a year, even 2 years or more in advance. They go through all sorts of details. They case places beforehand. You know, you find statements from these people many times where they explain why they picked the target that they did. And whether it be the Aurora Batman movie theater shooter or the Charleston church shooter or others, they make it clear that they've tried to avoid places where people have guns because they're worried that if somebody has quick access to a gun, they'll be able to stop them before they go and do much harm.
Yeah, you know, it's just not it's pretty
statistics.
Simple.
I mean, you look at the statistics on this, and you know, most right to carry states, you're going to be able to go and carry your gun in 97-98% of the state, and yet these attacks keep on occurring in that tiny part of the state where people aren't allowed to have permit concealed handguns. You look at something like the Batman movie theater shooter. There were seven movie theaters within a 20-minute drive of the killer's apartment. Only one of those movie theaters posted signs banning permanent concealed handguns. He didn't go to the movie theater that was closest to his home. He didn't go to the movie theaters that were the largest ones. He went to the only one that had posted signs banning permanent concealed handguns. You know, and you look at mall shootings, like in Omaha, Nebraska. There was one mall out of the 8 enclosed malls in the area that had signs banning permanent concealed handguns. That's the one the killer went to. It happened to be the farthest mall from his home. The Kansas City mall shooting, same type of facts. Same in Salt Lake City or in Portland, Oregon.
Hey, John.
So it's at some point people...
Sorry, yes. I just want to jump in. This is Taylor Walters. I'm the producer of the show. I wanted to ask you a question because President Trump has just signaled that he's open to expanding federal compliance with background checks. And I know that's something that you also write a lot about and that you know a lot about. And so what would you advise the president in before he backs any sort of expansion for these background checks for purchasing firearms?
Well, look, everybody wants to try to keep bad guys from getting guns. I guess there are a few points that I would make here. One is any of the expansions that people have talked about would not have stopped this attack last week, would not have stopped any of the mass public shootings during this century. And yet, after each of the mass public shootings during Obama's administration, he brought this up as a solution. We heard it within an hour or two of the last time. I personally wish we would go and focus on something that would actually matter rather than going and talking about things that gun control advocates that push, that I think they push for other reasons that have nothing to do with trying to make us safer. The second thing is there's just a lot of misinformation about these background checks. I mean, I don't know how many times we hear in the media that there's, 3 million dangerous prohibited people that have been stopped from buying guns because of background checks. That's simply false. What they should say is that there have been 3 million denials and that virtually all of those have been mistakes. You know, it's one thing to stop a felon from buying a gun. It's another thing to stop somebody who simply has a name similar to a felon from buying a gun. And, you see this in the numbers. the last year that the Obama administration issued kind of the full annual report on the NICS system, there were 76,000 purchases who were denied permanently because of background checks. They only prosecuted about 28 of those cases, and they got 13 convictions. And those 13 convictions are not hardened criminals. They're more like, you know, a case would be a guy 40 years earlier had gotten into a fist fight with his brother. Neighbors had called the police, and they both pleaded guilty to domestic misdemeanor violence. But the thing is, what happened to the other cases? Well, they just weren't real cases. You know, it's when President Clinton was in office, Republicans criticized him for not enforcing the laws. When President Bush was in office, Democrats criticized him for the low enforcement rate. When Obama was there, Republicans criticized him. Well, the dirty secret is it's not that Bush didn't want to enforce the laws, or Clinton didn't want to enforce the laws, or Obama didn't want to enforce the laws. It's that they weren't real cases. And there's two big problems that have to be dealt with, I hope, if they're going to go and pass something with these background checks. The first one is, not only do you have all these mistakes, but it's particularly minorities that are harmed. People tend to have names similar to others in their racial groups. Hispanics have names similar to other Hispanics. Blacks tend to have names similar to other blacks. 30% of black males are legally prohibited from owning guns because of past criminal history. Well, whose names do you think their names are most likely to be confused with? Other law-abiding, good black males. There's no reason that should be happening. If private companies hit an error rate that was 100th the error rate that the federal government has in doing its background checks, they'd be sued out of existence. All you have to do is have the federal government have to obey the same regulations that the federal government requires that private companies have to obey in doing background checks. And the second thing, just briefly, is just the cost. You know, in Washington, D.C., where President Trump's located, it costs $125 to privately transfer a gun solely because of just looking at the cost of the background checks. And, you know, you can find some places in the country where it's cheaper. The cheapest is in Oregon, where it's $55 to do that. But whether it's $55 or $125, that's a real cost for many people. It may not stop you or I from getting a gun, but it may stop some poor minority who's living in a high-crime urban area who wants to have a gun to protect themselves legally and their family. And that can be solved, too. If you believe the background check reduces crime for everybody, not just the guy who's buying it, as an economist, I would say pay for it out of general revenue.
Yeah. Well, listen, John, unfortunately, we're out of time, but thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate it. John Lott, president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. I appreciate it, and we'll have you back on soon. Thanks, John.
Thank you. People can find more at our website at crimeresearch.org. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.